Family Room Podcast, where I, Peter Squires, get to know your friends and neighbors. My family. Welcome to the Family Room Podcast, getting to know your friends and neighbors. I'm Peter Squires. My guest on this episode is Nova Mullineaux, owner of Adele's Coffee House in Dover, New Hampshire. Nova and I discussed ordering coffee in other countries, coming home to your cats, sitting on anthills, balancing friendship and bossship, and Annie Potts, among other things. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. Yeah, we went to L.A., Hawaii, Australia, Thailand, Egypt, and then, like, traveled through Europe for...
How long?
3 months. Yeah. So we, like, moved here, and then we left, you know, and then, so coming home, it was, like, you know, like, definitely a big homecoming from having been away for so long, but then also this total, kind of like a total starting over,
mm-hmm.
you know, where like we had lived here for a little while, but hadn't totally made it home yet.
Yeah.
And there was someone else living in our room and like, you know, so just like having a whole new amount of like making it feel like home, making it feel like our own place,
uh-huh.
getting to see it not in the snow,
yeah.
you know, and like just a different kind of homeness.
Yeah. I know that when I go away for a long period, I mean, the longest I ever go away is like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But you always, it's so nice to have this, your established place.
Mm.
That must have been weird to come to a place that wasn't completely established.
Yeah. Me. And to, but also like in relation to staying in Airbnbs, it was
yeah.
like, oh my God,
yeah.
I know where I am.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I speak the language. I know where to get coffee, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That was a weird thing, coffee elsewhere,
mm-hmm.
you know, just sort of like what things are called and how they drink coffee in other places. Like even going to Australia, which is like basically more or less the same
mm-hmm.
as here. It was like,
there's like the flat white thing.
Yeah. If you ask for a black coffee, the first thing they start doing is foaming milk and you're like, nope, that's not what I meant. Yeah.
Huh.
It's just a totally different thing.
Yeah. I've only ever been, as far as overseas goes, to Paris and Prague.
Mm.
Oh, and I went to Iceland for three days. But I knew what to expect in Paris because everybody knows what to expect in Paris.
Yeah.
You're getting an espresso shot or you're getting like a cappuccino
yeah.
or a latte. But when we were in Iceland, it was exactly like here.
Hmm.
You could get a drip coffee. You could get a latte. The
yeah.
sizes were very Starbucksian.
Huh.
It was like really weird.
I wonder if they have adopted coffee culture from Starbucks.
I feel like they probably did. But it was everywhere.
Huh.
And the cafes were so cute.
I bet.
Yeah.
We didn't go to Iceland, but I really want to.
It was really nice.
I've never heard anyone say anything bad about going to Iceland.
No.
Only that it's magical.
Yeah. And, like, I can't imagine the type of person who wouldn't like, I mean, we were only in Reykjavik. Like I said, we were only there for 3 days, but,
yeah.
You'd have to be a really hard, like asshole conservative to hate.
It's so boring here.
It's so boring and liberal.
What do you mean they get their healthcare for free? I hate it.
Exactly.
Yeah. One of the reasons we didn't go to Iceland on our big trip, cause it was initially on our itinerary, was as we were like reading other people's travel blogs and stuff, somebody wrote, we read one about going to Iceland and they were like, it's actually really easy to get to, like it takes less time to fly from Boston to Iceland than it does to fly from Boston to Seattle
or to Boston, like, to even Florida.
Yeah.
It's like weird.
And it's like, I've done Boston to Seattle. Like it was long, but like doable,
yeah.
you know? So it didn't feel, it took away the feeling that like, if we don't do this now, we'll never do it.
Yeah.
You know,
that's true.
Whereas like in the context of going to these places that are literally across the world, it's like, I don't know if we'll have the time to do that again.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true. Yeah. Going to places like like you said Vietnam and Thailand.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to do that, but the barrier of language and culture really scares me.
Thailand was kind of easy. Like,
really?
It was a lot easier than I would have guessed. And honestly, like, we were in mostly touristy places, or like tourist, like places that were accustomed to having tourists,
mm-hmm.
even if they weren't touristy in a like shiny Disney-ish sort of a way. They like they were prepared for tourists
yeah.
to be there. I don't think we were ever anywhere where somebody didn't speak English.
Mm-hmm.
Like, English is so prevalent throughout the world.
That makes sense.
Yeah. That it was like, great. That makes it easy for me, but also like, wow, I feel like an idiot because everyone mm-hmm. else speaks a second language at least. And I don't at all.
You know what I mean? A little bit. In Paris, you always get fed that if you try to speak the language first, they at least treat you better.
Yeah.
And they know immediately that you don't speak English.
Totally.
And they're like, you know, they give you a little pat on the head and they start speaking English for you. But it happened to me at least twice when we were in Paris. I have an okay accent.
Yeah.
And of course I'm like trying to flaunt it.
You know? Totally.
I can make the guttural R's really well. And so I'd start to like talk and then they just start speaking French to me so quickly afterward. And I'd be like, I have to stop them and be like, sorry, I don't actually speak French, which was really cool.
Yeah.
And at the same time, really.
How did they react to that?
They'd be like, actually, I don't really remember if anybody was like pissed, but I remember just having like some eye rolling happening.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, like nice impression.
Yeah,
of
exactly.
Yeah.
You didn't fool me. You think you fooled me, but you didn't fool me.
That's funny. Or like, you mean I have to say all that shit again? You are wasting my time, great American. Yeah. Thailand was, I would definitely recommend it because it takes a long time to get there. And like, the flight's probably expensive, but once you're there, it's like impossibly cheap. Like,
okay.
The food is like, I think the most we spent at like an overpriced place for a feast was the equivalent of like $20.
That's awesome.
For both of us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was like,
and just the best, probably.
So unbelievably delicious. And I can't do dairy and Anne can't do gluten. And it was like the only country where neither of us ever had to worry about it at all.
Just rice and
rice and
meat and stuff.
Coconut milk
and
like just curries and super fresh like fish that was caught from over there. And, you know, it was just like, it was pretty amazing for sure.
I would love to do that.
Yeah. And I feel like going other places that seemed really different and getting by okay sort of made me feel less afraid to go other places that are mm-hmm. even maybe even more different. Like, you know, they're probably not as accustomed to tourists in other Southeast Asian countries, but at least I've already been to Thailand. So it's like, all right, I have got like some frame of reference
mm-hmm.
for what it might be like other places. So when you went to Iceland, was it just like, did you just go there for 3 days or was it on the way to somewhere?
No, we were there for a friend's wedding. So it was a destination wedding. That was an interim stop to their wedding, to their honeymoon.
Nice.
So what they planned, because I guess with Iceland Air, you can do this thing where if you're going to Germany or you're going somewhere in Europe, if you plan a stop in the middle and fly Iceland Air, they'll like pay for your room and board or something.
I've heard about this.
Which we didn't obviously get to take advantage of, but that's what they went to the Black Forest in Germany for their honeymoon. And we all convened in Iceland for 3 days for their wedding, which was amazing because we didn't have to do anything. We seriously just got up, went to Iceland. Everything was planned for us for 4 days.
Mm.
We barely slept and then we came home. And the there was barely any jet lag because it's a 5-hour trip.
Yeah.
And you arrive, I think that was actually on the way home. You arrive home at the exact time you left there.
Whoa.
So yeah, that was totally kind of cool.
Yeah, that was a good thing for us on our trip, was we were going west the whole time. So we were always gaining hours mm-hmm. instead of losing them.
That's cool. You know?
So we didn't really have jet lag that bad at any point. And there was a lot of like overnight flights, mm-hmm. you know, sleeping while we were traveling. Yeah. But then, and then coming home and sort of having a mixture of feelings of like, it's so dull and boring and colorless here, but also like, oh my God, thank God.
Yeah.
Like we get to have a routine again. Mm-hmm. We get to have our own bed again. We get to,
I know that part of what buffers my coming home from little vacations is always that I get to see my cats, mm-hmm. which yeah, is totally. Silly, but like part of the guilt of leaving them for a long period of time, assuaging that yeah. finally. And then also, you know, getting to see them and, you know, just being at home.
Yeah. And having friends, like mm-hmm. when you go on vacation, like I had never traveled for anywhere, like you just said, like more than a week or two, you know? And I had hardly ever left the country. So it had never really, I guess I'd sort of taken for granted that like wherever I am, I know somebody mm-hmm. and to spend that long with just the two of us, like not having any friends, yeah. it was like, I was so excited to come home and be like, oh my God, I know so many people, you know?
It's yeah. There's like, stress involved in not having that element of, I don't know, just of comfortableness with other people.
Yeah. Though it was, I found it nice, and I don't think this is even necessarily about traveling, it just about like interruption of your routine. It felt nice to, like when you don't have a job or a group of friends or a like any sort of external things about you that are like your identifiers, mm-hmm. like the things that sort of like neatly sum up
like your
who
purpose.
You are.
Yeah.
yeah. Then it's like, well, what are you left with? Like, yeah. what do other people see? And it's like, maybe that's just like who you are in essence mm-hmm. is like the you that's completely removed from all the other things that sort of like characterize
yeah.
you.
Huh.
Yeah. That felt kind of good. Be like, oh, I'm still me, even though I don't have like a house or friends or family.
Nobody cares
or,
you what
know.
You do.
Yeah, yeah. and then there's like way more of an identification of like, well, what's your nationality?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, oh, American is like way higher on the list of things that define me
totally.
Than I ever would have realized mm-hmm. or thought about. But it's true.
Yeah.
You know? What, are you, have you always lived around here?
I was born in Florida.
Huh.
My parents met, live in Florida, probably a year before I was born, but they're both from Long Island.
Really?
So they had both moved to Florida.
Where on Long Island?
My mom was from Wanta.
Okay.
And my father was from, I can't remember where my dad was from. I want to say Montauk, but I don't think that's true. I know my father, my grandfather on my dad's side grew up in New Rochelle.
In
which is
upstate.
Yeah.
I'm from Long Island.
But it's a little further north of
Long Island. Yeah, north
of
the city.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was probably, I don't really know. But yeah, so they met in Florida and they had me and then they got married and they had my sister. And my dad had leukemia. So we moved up north to Maine, which was closer to his family who were in New York. And my mom's family was all in Maine, kind of just to get close to every, you know, back to close with family.
Yeah.
So that was when I was five. So for the most part, I'm a Mainer or at least a New Englander.
Yeah.
But I do have that blip in my history where I'm from Florida.
Florida, wow.
Which is weird.
Do you remember it?
I remember a lot of it. But I mean, you know, in the way that kids, your memories are from childhood, which are very hazy
totally.
And sometimes actually just formed by pictures.
Yeah. I was just thinking about that. Like there are some things that I don't know if they're actually a memory or if they're just like a like mental animation mm-hmm. of a home movie or a photo. Or
I
something.
Surely, I definitely have a few memories that I know weren't from pictures because we were as most kids were in the early 80s, kind of left to our own devices.
Yeah.
Even though we were so young, we were in the front yard all the time, even though our parents weren't right there. And we would go to our next door neighbor's house and turn on her like lawn faucet and like, you know, and walk into their house randomly. And we just were, we were just like not kept. And I have a very distinct memory of walking over to my sister, who I don't think could walk yet at one point. She was in diapers and she was sitting on like a mountain of sand and just screaming at the top of her lungs. And I went and got my mom, and my mom came out and she was sitting on a fire ant.
Oh my God.
So I have, that memory is very like real in my brain.
I know. And there's no pictures of that. Sand. Yeah. I was just like, oh Jesus, this can only end one way.
And I think there's like, I have this one weird memory of like I said, going over to my next door neighbor's house. We weren't supposed to be doing this, but taking her hose and turning it on and putting it into my ear and being pretty positive that the water was coming out the other ear. But of course it's really just washing over my face
right.
and out the other side. Those are two big memories.
I remember I was like a very cautious kid. I wasn't like a crazy, I've never really had a like adrenaline rush gene. I'm just like, I was just like very obedient mm-hmm. as a kid.
So
and then I turned, I don't know, my mom used to tell me that like I turned like 9 years old and suddenly I got sarcasm mm-hmm. and they were like, where the hell did that come from? You know? But one of my earliest memories is like, our next door neighbors had like a bunch of kids and they were all just like really rambunctious, and that me and my dad had built this like, it was supposed to be like a clubhouse kind of a thing, you know, just like the most basic wooden shed mm-hmm. that would in concept be like my special boyhood hangout place. And that they like hopped over the fence between our houses and were like jumping off the roof of the clubhouse. And that even at probably age like 7, I was like, that's dangerous. I shouldn't be doing that.
You know what I mean? That's like, definitely how I was.
Seeing other little kids who were being hyperactive and like childish and just being like, oh no, mm-hmm. you can't do that.
I know that I wasn't a super serious kid, but I think I was also very serious. I think I was just so nervous all the time. Until I got to a certain age, just about everything.
Yeah.
About other people, about things happening. It's so weird. Where do you get that?
I don't know. I was going to ask you, like, why do you think that was? And what do you think changed?
I don't, I think what probably changed was just growing into this or hearing over and over again that the best way to live your life is to try things that you're scared of doing. Like part of the reason I did this today, Peter, is because I knew that I had to do it. Cause I was like, no. And then I was like, no, but you can do it.
I promise you hardly anybody is listening. If anybody at all.
That's not even really it. And I bet more people listen than you. Well,
no,
you,
I know exactly
have,
how
do
many
you have
people
numbers?
Listen.
Yeah.
It's really not we really are just doing this for fun.
It's not even really like I was more nervous about you, like this grand notion that you chose me and that I was going to disappoint.
Mm-mm.
Now I know that it's not like a choosing. Actually, how do you choose?
I've kind of like whittled it down. I think it's people who I don't know well, but have had positive interactions with,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, even if I've never talked to them in person, like, oh, I saw so-and-so do this thing that I think is cool. Mm-hmm. Or like you own the coffee shop that I like to go to mm-hmm. or whatever, just like someone who I like, but don't know well and want to get to know better.
Yeah.
And then I think that the, like the recorded, like, I think that makes for a good conversation
uh-huh.
and
it
good
really
conversations
does.
Are good to listen to.
I've been really mm-hmm. impressed with the ones that I've listened to at you. First, your ability to get people just rolling. And you know, the questions, like I was listening to one with my husband the other day and he was like, wow, that's an amazing question. And I had been listening, I'd listened to like four at that point. So I wasn't in that zone anymore. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, he's great at this. Like, cause I listen to a lot of podcasts. And I love interview podcasts.
Yeah.
And I've heard some like just fledgling ones where I'm just like, I don't know about this, but they'll get, I'm sure they'll get better. You know what I mean? Whereas I feel like, how many have you done so far?
50 something.
I listened to your 50th one. Who was that? I can't remember.
It was, Shannon and Jared from Main Meat.
Yeah. And, yeah, anyway, I lost my train.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's been really good for me. Like, I sort of reached this point of living on the seacoast where it was like, I feel like I had a hi-hello relationship with a lot of people, but didn't get much deeper than that with more than a handful, mm-hmm. you know? And it didn't feel good to me, you know? Like, you know, I moved up here 6+ years ago and, like, would have these moments of feeling like, yeah, I know a lot of people, but I don't feel close to a lot of people and like missing being in New York where I'm from, where like there are a lot of people who I've known for decades and feel really close to, and just sort of like feeling far away from the people who I was actually close to.
Yeah.
But it's like, that doesn't, so if I'm going to feel close to people, I have to move back to New York. Or go back to New York, you know, like, no.
So this was a mechanism.
Was a mechanism to get to know people better and also to, like, want to have another creative outlet mm-hmm. and loving podcasts and, like, wanting to try it as a medium. You know, like, I have recording equipment. I can do that. Yeah. Like, I know how to do that. So why not?
It's such a cool idea to, as a, well, just the fact that you kind of just took it. Like, I am very lucky in that where I work, I get to meet people all the time.
Yeah.
And I get to see them very frequently.
Yeah.
And I'm not very good at it, but if I really try, I can get closer to people if I want to. Not that I'm not good at it. It's more that I don't often try because of that nervousness.
Well, but it's also like you have such like quick interactions with people that like, it must be, you must just have to like pick up tiny tidbits along the way. And then over the course of like a year, you can piece together the puzzle.
The other thing that is cool about, cause I got to take it to the next level in that I own the place and I get to do the hiring. So I get to just to hire people that I love to hang around with all the time. And then we do get really close. Like I have a really close group of friends and they're all people who I write a paycheck to every week to be my friends.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It is really cool.
How is it balancing the like friendship and bossship?
I don't know if it's ideal as far as actually running the show. I think that it not so much right now, and that might have something to do with the crew. But in the past I've had long moments where I've felt just like kind of a punching bag, you know, where like, I know what I'm trying to get people to do and what I need people to do. Cause it's my baby, you know, like I need these people to kind of treat it like it's my child because that's how I feel about it. Like I need certain things to get done. As would anybody who was managing something, but it feels a little closer to me, I think, than that. And when people don't do what I need them to do, and I'm not unreasonable, I know I'm not, just because they don't want to take direction or whatever, it feels really personal.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, a result of the fact that I really love these people, you know, they're my friends.
Yeah.
Like I drink beers with them on the regular.
Yeah.
But, if like I ask them to do something and they don't do it and it doesn't feel like they just forgot, it feels like a personal affront.
Yeah.
Which is not cool.
I totally know what you mean. I totally know what you mean. It's hard to convey the feeling of ownership, you know, like the responsibility of it and like the attachment you feel to the thing you own.
Mm-hmm.
I can relate to what you're describing from like the experience of becoming a landlord.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we lived in Elliott, like we lived in the house and then there was like a carriage house apartment next door, and it was hard not to end up with a sort of curt business-like relationship with the people who lived there, even though they were always people who I knew beforehand and considered mm-hmm. friends or at least acquaintances.
Yeah.
That like the relationship ends up being like, you're living in this thing that I own, and that like, it's just hard to separate the sort of like responsibility aspect from it and the like caring for it aspect from it,
yeah.
from the like interpersonal relationship aspect of it, mm-hmm. you know? And, it feels better to live in the house with the people who I live with, you know, because you're just like amongst each other and interacting in a more sort of like all the time kind of a way, rather than in the like, let's have a check-in or we're only talking when something goes wrong kind of a way.
Yeah.
Wow. So do you feel like you're getting better at that, like balancing that?
Yeah, I'm definitely getting better at it. It also has a lot to do with the fact that over the last 9 years, my staff has kind of stayed the same age, but I've gotten older. So I'm not as close in age to the people. So though I may be really close to a few, I'm not as super close to all of them as I used to be. Like I used to be really tight with everybody and I'm tight with everybody, but it is more, oh shit. I thought I turned that off.
That's a good ring. You'll never miss a call.
All right. I turned it off. Sorry.
That's okay.
What was I saying? Oh yeah. More. Yeah. I'm just not.
You get older, they stay the same age.
So I am more of the, they often call me mom. So it's more of like a motherly thing than like a best friendy type.
Do you like that?
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
I do love it. It's sometimes it's kind of sarcastic in the best way.
Yeah.
You know, like, and in a very jokey way, like Kara and Rachel, I'll like come out of the closet, which is like my little office because we have no space there, and Carol will be like, quiet, mom's coming or something like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They know that I can hear them.
Yeah.
Everything they're doing.
Yeah. So how did you start Adele's, and like what prompted it?
So in my husband and I moved to Philly in 2005, and at the time we weren't married.
From where?
From Portsmouth.
Okay.
And we lived there for a year and a half. And in the time we were there, there were just so many cool coffee shops. I worked in one that wasn't the coolest, but I still loved it. And we were at coffee shops all the time. And they were comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And you wanted to be in them. And they were cool. That was the biggest thing. Cool people owned them. Cool people worked there. There was cool music playing.
Yeah.
And so we came back here and we were like, this area is cool, but it doesn't have any cool coffee shops.
Mm-hmm.
And comfortable. I just want people to come in and sit down and want to ask what's on the stereo, you know? And we moved back. I had no idea what to do with my life. I didn't want to go back to the service industry really because it's dead endy. And I decided I was going to go to grad school for social work because I couldn't think of anything. I was a sociology minor or major in college. And then I was like, so I did everything. Like I got in, I had signed up for my classes, and one of Dan's old friends called us up and he was like, listen, I've got this proposition for you. I've got a bunch of money saved up. I've got these credit cards that have zero APR for transfer, like money transfers. And I want to open a coffee shop in this spot where the cigar shop used to be. I drove by the other day and he's moving his cigars out. The rent's only $1,000. even if we can't make a go of it, the rent's only $1,000, you know?
Yeah.
So it was, he and his wife and my husband and I all went in on it. I quit my job like almost immediately. The plan was, my husband's a carpenter, so he was going to build the inside space. I was going to run it. And Anna and Adam were going to be basically the financiers or whatever. And they, I mean, they obviously, we all worked really hard to get it going in the first place, a lot of time and energy. And, but pretty much early on in the whole process, they kind of just left me to my own devices. I don't have to ask anybody any questions or anything. It's pretty much my baby.
Wow.
But we all get a quarter profit.
But that's so cool, though. Really, I mean, I feel like that's, that must be another sort of like dynamic to balance, where on the one hand, it's like, thank you for trusting me with this and like leaving me alone with it.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, like, hey, I'm doing all the work.
Yeah. No, and there have been like within the first 2 years, everybody was paid back their initial investment.
Oh, wow.
So as soon as that happened, there was a brief moment where we would like, the four of us would sit down with our finance guy, our accountant, and he would be like, okay, you guys could, there's enough money in the account, you each could take, you know, a payout. And it felt not good to have them taking as much money as me.
Yeah.
But when I was doing so much work, when I felt like I was doing, because in the first 2 months I was there from open to close 7 days a week. We open at 6:30, we close at 8.
Yeah.
For 2 months.
Yeah.
It was just under 2 months.
That's really, really hard.
Yeah.
Like that.
And I wasn't even, at that point, I wasn't really taking any pay because we didn't have any money to do that yet. I was kind of taking enough money that I could live on, but it was like not really a paycheck, you know?
Right.
And I mean, that ended pretty fast because we were, from the beginning, we were making a profit, which was cool. But yeah, that made me resent them a little bit for a second. And then I was like, no, this wouldn't have happened without them. There was no possible way on my Breaking New Ground salary and Dan's early carpentry salary that we could have done anything like this. On top of the fact that we didn't even have the idea for it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so there's no animosity at all. Adam and Anna are the coolest, and they live really close to us, and I don't know, it's like a little family.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's so cool. It's, yeah. And now it's been up and running and it's a living thing, and it's your baby is not a baby anymore.
No. No. She's going into junior high, my baby.
Does it still feel like you wanted it to feel when you had that idea in Philly?
I think even more so. I think there's, it definitely still has that feeling, but it also has an added feeling of establishment and like being established.
Yeah.
And knowing, I always knew we had a great product, but I don't know, just like we've been affirmed.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, I totally, totally agree and relate to the thing about the role that coffee shops play in a city or a community, that like they're these essential hangout spots, you know, like growing up as a teenager, you know, in the suburbs, like we found our favorite coffee shop and it was the one that had a bench outside for us to hang out on. Mm-hmm. And like, we didn't care about the coffee, but like our friends worked there and we sat on the bench outside and that was just like where we hung out, you know? And it was important to have that. When I first moved to the Seacoast, that's what I thought I was going to do. Was like, I guess my inspirations were, the Radio Bean in Burlington. Have you ever been there?
I haven't been there. I've heard of it.
It's like a coffee. Now it's a coffee shop and they added a restaurant, but it used to just sort of be like coffee by day, beer and wine by night, mm-hmm. and shows at night, you know?
Yeah.
And like it was like, room. I want to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And see, the Elvis room, I never actually like experienced. I only ever,
got to go once. I was in high school.
There was a place in Keene called the Starving Artist that mm-hmm. did sort of the same thing. And it was like, yeah, Portsmouth should have one of those. And at that time, my only like relationship with Portsmouth was through having worked on Star Island. So it was like, this is where I spend my days off. And it's like, yeah, this town could use a hangouty,
yeah,
kind of rock and rolly place.
I've
like
always
that.
Thought Killam filled that niche, except it's not as comfortable.
Yeah, I agree. Killam feels the way that I want a coffee shop to feel, except for, and I'm totally fine with like replacing like cool hip music with like the weird Turkish dance music, mm-hmm. like, cause that totally has like great character to yeah. it, but yeah, it's decidedly uncomfortable mm-hmm. in terms of the seats, but the benches outside, even the benches outside are kind of uncomfortable, but like
but it's nice because you can go there and you know for a fact you're gonna see at least one person you know.
Yeah,
you
know? I like the vibe of it there yeah. a lot. And then if Killam was open at night mm-hmm. and had like any kind of music, then that was basically be like my vision for a place. And then that kind of like turned into all these other visions that
yeah.
none of them ever really came to pass, but it's been an ever evolving relationship with like it being important that there are spaces for people to congregate in a like relaxed, comfortable and creatively inspiring way,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
So
I love it.
I'm totally with you on that. So how has Dover changed in that time?
Dover's changed. I went to UNH, and so we would go to Dover every once in a while, and then we'd be like, why didn't we go to Portsmouth? You know, where you want a downtown. Like, Dover's funny because there's a downtown, but, like, it's not utilized.
Yeah.
You know? There's that space that could be a cool hangout space with, like, I don't know, but it's just not used. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that the shops aren't really something that, on the whole, there are individual shops that are great, but it's just not a destination spot.
Yeah.
But in the time that I've been there, I feel like it's gotten a little better in that regard.
Yeah.
I also think that Dover may not have changed as much as Portsmouth has mm-hmm. changed, and that's done good things for Dover just in the people who live in Dover.
Yeah.
Just the fact that people are kind of, there's this mass exodus happening from Portsmouth to Dover and the surrounding towns. And it's great for me because yeah. I get to see people who I used to see all the time when I worked in Portsmouth and lived in Portsmouth, and they're all coming back to me.
Yeah.
You know,
feel totally.
Like a Pied Piper sort of.
Yes, you are. You're like, if you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that that's exactly right. That Dover probably hasn't changed as much as like, you know, and I think that that's sort of like the silver lining of the kind of like cultural decline of Portsmouth, you know, is that the towns around it have really benefited from the overflow.
Yeah.
You know, Kittery, true. Obviously.
Yeah.
And Dover and even like Newmarket, you mm-hmm. know, it's like all of these other places are getting cooler because it's like there's no room for cool new ideas there.
Somebody told me the other day that Dover is the fastest growing city in New Hampshire, but it's growing by like 12%, which is like an enormous amount, I feel
yeah.
like. Like,
totally.
Where are they?
Yeah.
Where are they going?
Yeah.
It's huge.
I mean, for us, like, it's, you know, we don't live in Dover, but we live Dover, you know, we used to live in Elliott and Kittery was kind of our go-to town.
Mm-hmm.
And now we live in Madbury and Dover's our go-to town. And so we're like, we're just a little bit closer than we were before, but we have a different sort of like leaning on it.
Yeah.
You know? And it feels good. It's like, okay, I can lean on this.
Yeah.
Like, I can get down with
this. I think Dover's great because it's, there's a seediness to Dover that I don't think could ever possibly go away. Now, I'm sure people said that about Portsmouth at one point, but like for a little while we were thinking about making shirts that said keep Dover dirty and like, you know, as part of our marketing campaign and
yeah.
just, I don't know. It's nice to have a place where you know that it's not just people in chino shorts
yeah.
crossing the street all the time.
the seediness of Dover doesn't feel overly menacing either.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. No, you never feel uncomfortable. Like you're yeah. going to get like kicked or something. Yeah. I don't know.
I feel bad saying it. I feel like judgy, but like, I don't know. The last time I went to Rochester, I was like, oh man, like there's a certain kind of like, there's just like a vibe that was, I could only describe as apocalyptic.
Yeah.
You know,
no,
it just
and that's
felt a little zombified.
I think the reason it feels that way is because architecturally, Rochester's one of the coolest cities ever. Hmm. It's so cool. The way the opera house and the way that like the streets are set up and there's that circle and which actually is kind of similar to Dover in that way. But all of the buildings are old and, but they're not kept up.
Yeah.
And there's just kids smoking butts and drinking Monster Energy drinks on the street.
Yeah.
The only businesses that survive are tattoo shops. Not that there's anything wrong with tattoo shops, but they're trying to get... Am I doing that? Sorry.
That's okay.
There's a huge initiative with Rochester to... They're giving money to businesses to...
Wow.
To open businesses in Rochester in the downtown area. And I know a couple, like I know that Dose tried, I know somebody else who tried the Cask and Grind and it's just nothing works. Huh. Sad. That Revolution place seems to do really well. Do you know about that place?
I haven't been there
There's
yet.
Like a gastropub. I've been there once, but yeah, it's just, I find Rochester to be a sad, sad thing because I really think Rochester could be so cool.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. Any thought to Adele's Junior or something like
Not,
that?
No, I just, no. I think part of it is that who would I hire?
Right.
You know, my pool of hiring in Dover has been, it's been great.
Adele's Monster Shop.
Yeah.
You could just have a like cooler full of Monster Energy drinks.
So many
cigarettes.
People come in. It's happened so many times and only recently, which I think is weird because you'd think this was on its way out, but do you have energy drink shots or energy drink? There's
like a 5-hour energy drink.
No, it's like you can do like Red Bull with a shot of something in it or something.
Like espresso?
I don't know.
That sounds disgusting.
That sounds really gross.
That sounds horrible.
But I think like Aroma Joe's does something like
Ooh,
that.
Oh, come on.
And I think that's where it comes from.
That's just like,
I haven't done my research, so I don't really know what this
yeah,
is.
Yeah, but come on. Though I kind of think that like, even like flavored coffee is kind of gross to me.
Yeah, I have a really hard time. Because
it's like coffee is a flavor, yeah. you know, but people like it.
Yeah, it's usually people's like foray into coffee, in the coffee world. Like I know when I was in high school, I would go to Dunkin' Donuts and get a vanilla iced coffee extra extra.
What's
and
extra,
I said
extra what?
Extra sugar, extra cream.
Nice.
Don't melt my sugar because I want to chew it.
Oh
like,
my
that's
God.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
But
I guess,
know.
Yeah, when I was thinking back to that coffee shop that I used to go to in high school, I didn't even order coffee. I would make them make me like an Oreo freeze or something like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just pretty much just like, I want to sip a cookie. I want to sip a cookie and sit on this bench. And I remember them being like, we don't have any Oreos, but if you go to the store and get some,
that's
and I was
cool.
like, okay, I will.
That's awesome.
We just have to like blend up Oreos, milk, and ice for you. Okay, whatever.
That's awesome.
So like, where did you, I guess put in the context of like your time in Philly, maybe I already know the answer, but like, where are you now compared to like where you thought you would be at this point in your life?
Oh, I'm like, I never thought that I consider myself successful, which
yeah.
is really cool. I mean, we don't have a ton of money or anything and you know, but I just feel as far as like when I was in high school, I keep going back to high school for some reason, but when I was in high school, I used to dream about working in a coffee shop in like Seattle. Cause it was that time.
Right.
Like I graduated from high school in 98. So
yeah.
between 95 and 98, like I was watching Singles and
totally.
That's what I wanted, you know?
Yeah.
And then I got it.
Yeah. Totally, you did.
And it's really cool. Like, I when I was a kid, my favorite movie was Pretty in Pink. And you know how, you know the Annie Potts character in Pretty in Pink? Have you seen it?
Yeah.
She was my favorite character. You know, she owned the record store and she had the, you know, the Liberty spikes. And
totally.
When we first opened the shop, I was like, I'm going to be the Annie Potts. Well, actually more than anything, it was when we first started hiring, you know, I was like, I'm going to be the Annie Potts boss. That's who I'm going to be. I'm going to be like the weird kooky mom.
I always thought she was secretly Foxy in, Ghostbusters.
Oh yeah.
You know,
the best.
It's like when I saw Ghostbusters as a kid, it's like, oh, she's a nerd because she has glasses on. It's like, no, she's sexy.
Yeah, know? She's like chewing gum. Yeah. The Ghostbusters, what do you want? She's the best.
She's so good.
And designing women.
I never
did
saw
you
that.
Ever see this?
No. That was Delta Burke, right?
Yeah, and Annie Potts was in that.
Oh, yeah, I can like picture it in my head, but I don't think I ever watched it. Yeah, and it's cool that now that you've been doing it for a while, it still feels like you're living the dream.
It does.
You know, that still feels attractive. That it's not like, oh, I always imagined owning a coffee shop and like being the Annie Potts, but it turns out that it actually sucks. You're like, no, it's...
No, and there are elements that are... Sometimes I feel like I can't, like every once in a while, I'll go through this phase, like probably once a year. It's usually around summertime. It's usually around now, although I haven't really hit it this year, where I'm like, I can't do this anymore. It gets really, really, really busy in the summertime. If somebody hiring is so hard because you're scared you're making a mistake, and I've only really made 2 or 3 big mistakes as far as hiring goes, but that means then you have to fire.
Right.
And then just making sure that you're staffed to be able to handle, like, it feels, I think to a lot of people looking in, it feels like it is just like a clubhouse and we're all just like hanging out and a byproduct is the coffee we throw out every once in a while to customers. But, it is actually hard work.
Yeah.
When it's really busy. Especially.
Well, I'm always like amazed. Not always, but sometimes when it's really busy in there, like seeing how many people you have behind that tiny counter.
That's fairly recent too. It's only within the last year we had the third person on the schedule. And often even if I'm not scheduled, I'm there.
Yeah.
So it's 4 people in that. It's like, what, 3 by 7? Yeah.
And you're all like really doing something.
Yeah.
You know, no one's just like standing still taking up space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're new, it can be really, really daunting. Like, I have just hired 3 people and I'm actually nervous about one of them. I'm nervous she's not going to want to do it. I know she could handle it. She's like, her experience is crazy. But I think she's just nervous about the space and like the intimacy and the having to learn a ton of shit and just like 2 weeks. And then being thrown to the lion.
Yeah. I mean, but there's only one way to learn. And it's by doing that and by feeling overwhelmed. I don't know. I just started relatively recently a like service industry job after not having been in the service industry for a really long time. And it was definitely like, and even when I was in the service industry, I waited tables at like the world's least popular and busy Italian restaurant in Spanish Harlem. <You know? laughs> And it was just like, yeah, I never got slammed. I never like had to run around. I never had to remember things. It was just like, it was the easiest and probably worst like table waiting job you could have.
Oh, wow.
Not worst, because I wasn't like unhappy there, but it wasn't at all what you picture of like waiting tables in Manhattan. You know?
Yeah, and how do you make money if you're not busy?
You
really?
Pretty much don't. But I was like, you know, 21 or 22, 20, whatever. And so like re-entering the service industry at a place that does get busy sometimes, and like feeling that crunch and just like acclimating to that overwhelmedness, but just like that, like, yeah, like, it only pours this fast, and, like, the only difference between being overwhelmed and not being overwhelmed is how I process it internally.
Yeah, totally. You know?
Like, if I can either feel overwhelmed by this or I can feel okay with it, and that's just a consequence of experience.
Mm-hmm. You know? It's true.
And people are amazingly adaptive.
Yeah. Like, but then there are people who aren't, and that's then that's an issue.
Yeah. I guess you probably have that direct experience. So what's your like what are the other things that sort of like make you you? Because like you know, I only really know you from Adele. Mm-hmm. So like, but you're not at the place of having to work 80 hours a week anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So like what else is like central in your life experience?
Well, I don't really do a lot. I am there a lot, and I have like Tuesday and Wednesdays are still consumed by the shop, even though I'm not behind the counter. It's like paperwork and stuff like that. So I really have Sundays. So Sundays are consumed with Dan and I just bought kayaks.
Awesome.
So we've been kayaking.
We just got kayaks too.
Yeah. I'm pretty stoked about this.
Where do you kayak?
Barrington has like 2,000 lakes or something. Just kidding. It's a lot of lakes though. It's a lot of bodies of water. So far we've just done Swains. I think next or the week after next, we're going to try to do Winnipesaukee or not Winnipesaukee, up in Northwood, Pawtuckaway.
Oh yeah.
And, the first time we went out, we rented kayaks before we purchased them at, in Portsmouth, the little harbor area.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really fun.
Yeah.
But I really like it.
We live right near the, Bellamy Reservoir.
Uh-huh.
So you're not allowed to swim there because it's a water supply for Portsmouth, but you are allowed to boat there.
That's cool.
So we got like the cheapest kayaks we could find, and we've taken them out there a couple of times, and it was just definitely this like big moment of like, oh my God, this just made living here so much more worth it.
Yeah.
You know, like we suddenly have a lake house.
Yeah. You know? Well, that's part of the thing is my husband grew up on a ship. Like he's a boat guy.
Wow.
He, his dad runs a hospital ship that, this like Christian based organization that, has a, like pretty much a working hospital on it. And they go to third world countries on, you know, on the outskirts of, so they did a lot of, I think, well, he was in high school, they were in South America for the most part. And more recently, they've been doing the coasts of Africa. But they do facial surgeries for people who have like cleft palates or big growths or something because there's, or, eye problems, so that they have a better chance of entering the workforce.
Wow.
Because there's so much stigma involved in having some sort of problem with your face.
Yeah.
And obviously like glasses for people who have no access to glasses and things like that.
Wow.
But, he's an engineer, his dad. So he's like the head engineer of the ship. That's currently being, I think it's being built. A new ship is being built. So right now they're in China doing
wow.
like the PR and all of that involved in this crazy thing. That's just so anyway, when Dan was on the ship, he was in high school. It was his full 4 years of high school and he worked and lived on the ship and he just fell in love with
wow.
being on the water.
That's unbelievable. That what a crazy way to grow up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool. It's just part of his life though. So
yeah.
Like he goes into the stories and stuff. Like he's got weird piranhas chasing him back to the, to the ship stories and just so many stories. But he, has been trying to figure out how we on a meager budget can purchase a boat.
Mm.
And for a little while we had, and he's a carpenter. So he at first he wanted a wooden boat cause he could work on it. So for a little while we had like this 17 foot, Old Town Lapstrake from like 1954 or something. It was beautiful.
A sailboat?
No, just a little motorboat. Mm. That he wanted to, we realized it wasn't big enough to take on the Piscataqua, which is really what he wanted to do. He wanted to do something more ocean-y. So we ended up selling it with the hopes of getting something bigger. And then we just realized that we just don't have the budget for that.
Yeah.
So the kayaks have become the new way to get on the water without spending a ton of money.
Wow. Well, that's cool. I mean, it's like I guess the cool thing about boats and maybe with everything is that like there's a boat for every budget. You know, there's like,
true.
If you just need to be on the water, like start here and then you can kind of like grow into the boat of your dreams eventually.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's really cool, man. It must be so weird to like land on land after spending high school on a hospital ship in the third world.
And so he immediately after like his freshman year of college spent in Texas at an engineering college where he majored in flight. So it's like the exact opposite.
Wow.
So he's got his pilot's license too, but he's extremely colorblind, so he can't fly at night.
Whoa.
So he could never get a job doing that. Huh. So he quit pretty early in the program, realizing that there was no way to get a job afterward in that field. He could have, but it wouldn't have been what he wanted.
It would have been hard, yeah. How did you guys meet?
I worked at Bull Moose in Portsmouth. It was 2000. It was 2000. I worked at Bull Moose and he worked at Breaking New Grounds when it was in its old location on Market Street.
Where was that?
I want to say Ganesh is there now. No, maybe not Ganesh. Whatever it is, it's painted bright yellow.
Okay.
It's like across the street from J.L. Coombs.
Okay. Yeah, so it didn't move far.
Yeah. No, it didn't move far. But it's kind of part of the reason we ended up opening our shop is because when that place, when it was there, there were like these two seats in the windows, very similar to the two seats in the windows at Adele's. Mm-hmm. And so it's the reason when Adam drove by, he saw it and he thought coffee shop because he had seen something similar, you know, in his past. But we met, just like, we were both in college and we were both scared of everything. And he would come in and I would duck behind the counter of the record store and just watch him on the monitors. He was so cute, but I couldn't talk to him. And then, he worked at Breaking New Grounds. And one time I went in there and all I had was a $50 bill and I was mortified. Cause I was like, I'm gonna have to hand this guy a $50 bill. And actually I talked to him about it. And so he actually like engaged me for a second. Like he was like, hey, how is your day? And I like flipped and I was like, all I have is $50 bill. Can you break it? I remember that. It was like, I felt so stupid. It was like a total palm to forehead moment. And so then we both started dating other people. Like we both were into each other, but we were both scared shitless of each other. So then we both started dating other people. And then 3.5 years later, after having broken up with our significance, it actually turned out that, he was roommates with a girl that I needed to get out of my apartment. And I called my friend who I worked with and I was like, can I stay with you? I just need to stay for like a couple of days. And I just got her voicemail. And then I was like, and at this point I just wasn't really thinking about Dan now. I was just thinking about where I was with this other person. I was kind of beat up and then not physically, emotionally. I called him and I was like, listen, I can't get in touch with Melody. I'm sure she'd be fine if I stayed there. Do you mind if I stay there? And he like got in his car. He came and got me. He brought me to the store and we rented The Last Unicorn and got cookies. And he just like, from that point forward, like he basically like coddled me and then swooped in.
Yeah.
And
it worked.
Yeah. That was 2005. It was the very beginning of 2005.
Wow. And the rest is history.
The rest is history.
Wow. That's cool. That's really cool. So what do you think is like, what's going to be your next big change in your life?
Dan and I always talk about moving to Maine, like northern Maine.
Mm.
I think the idea being a kind of virgin area that has a downtown, like Belfast or something like that, that would be kind of, we love the seacoast, but we're having a hard time with how many people there actually are.
Mm.
And people is good for me if you own a coffee shop, but at the same time, like Dan, in trying to get to work every day, it should take him 15 minutes, but it takes him an hour and a half because of the traffic. And, you know, I think we're at a point where, and not immediately, not even close to immediately, it would definitely be years off, but I think the next big move would be up north, just because I just love it up there.
Yeah.
Dan loves it up there.
Like a more remote kind of smaller, slower vibe.
It would be, but I'd also need to have some sort of town near me. I can't be in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
But that's just me. Dan could be in the middle of nowhere and be just fine. So yeah, but I don't know if I feel like I said before, it feels weird, but to say that I would almost feel guilty taking Adele's with me. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
And I think that there could be another iteration of Adele's if I did decide to go, and it would be fine. But
well, like, would you have to? Like, could Adele's function without you being there?
I do think it would. It could. I think it would be different.
Well, yeah.
But I think it would be fine.
That would be kind of cool to, like, own a business that has, like, a general manager or something who you really trust.
No, I'd have to sell it.
Oh, really?
I don't think I could do it.
Really?
Like that, yeah.
How come?
I don't know. Well, first of all, the drive from a place like Belfast would be crazy, and every once in a while, you would have to be kind of around. I'm not a good manager. I'm actually a terrible manager. The reason that I think what I do works is because I'm there all the time. So I know what needs to be ordered because I just went and tried to get it and it's not there. Whereas if I were trying to do that from far away, I don't think it would work.
No, what I mean is you becoming like the other three owners where like someone else totally takes on those responsibilities and you just collect a check.
I don't know. Maybe. I'd have to see. Also, I think part of the reason that what I do works is because I do have such an investment in it. Paying somebody to do it they still don't probably, I don't know. It could possibly work.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, why shouldn't you,
whenever you do. From time to time, I'd have to be like, absentee landlords are the worst.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like if there's something goes wrong, you kind of have to be around.
Yeah, I guess so. And like you've made this investment in a place and you built it. So like, why shouldn't you continue to reap the rewards from it? But I guess you also would.
If we sold it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hope anyway.
That was kind of the process that I had with our house in Elliott was like, I love this place. It sort of serendipitously fell into our laps and it was really home and it's where we first lived together. And like, you know, I have a real emotional attachment to it. And then when we decided to move here, it was like really hard for me to let go of it. So I was like, oh, well, we'll keep it and we'll make it like a rental property and it'll just like generate income, you know? And then I can like claim that income and it'll help me get the mortgage that I need for the new house and blah, blah, blah. And then it just was like really quickly after that it was like, that doesn't feel good anymore. Mm-hmm. And like, now that I'm not living there, I don't have the same attachment to it that I did before.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, is this a worthwhile investment or not?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't feel like it is anymore. So we're going to sell it.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, and now that we're going to sell it, I do feel a little bit of that, like having to let go of it all over again, but it feels a lot easier because somewhere else is home now.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Will you make a profit on it?
I hope so.
Just based on the market, what you know about the market.
It depends. So like I think I will be able to make a profit on it, but it needs, like, so there's this, it has a barn on the property that, like, really needs work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping to be able to sell the house to somebody who doesn't mind that and is, like, willing to put in the work or mm-hmm. willing to pay for the work. Because I just feel like what I hope that they don't just, like, knock it down because it's historic. You know, the house was built in 1820.
Yeah.
So, like, I want someone to care enough to fix it and make it continue to be alive. But I am not that person anymore, you know? So it's like, if I have to be the one to pay to fix the barn, then I will probably be hoping to break even
yeah.
at the end of the day.
Uh-huh.
And if I don't have to be the one to pay to fix the barn, then I can probably walk away with some profit.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know yet. But from everything I've heard is that, like,
this is
there's
the market,
not
right?
enough houses
yeah.
to sell on the seacoast right now. And mm-hmm. that, like, now that Kittery's cool, Elliot is, like, close to Kittery,
yeah.
which, like,
I mean, we
it used to be
into,
Kittery is close to Portsmouth, you know?
We looked into Elliot for briefly. And yeah, the prices right now
yeah.
are just astronomical.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is it has penny. This, it has this rental property on the premises, mm-hmm. you know? So it's like, you know, that generates income that really helps, you know, mm-hmm. like offset the cost of living there.
Yeah. Whatever.
And there's already tenants living in there. So hopefully we'll be able to sell it to someone who isn't scared off by the barn situation and, like, is excited about it. Like, I get to, like, revive and keep this thing alive. And also is pumped about the tenants that are already in there and wants to let them keep living there.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I would feel really bad if I had to kick them out because
yeah.
we were selling it. Because it's really nice to have tenants who are happy to be there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Who love the space.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But hopefully we'll sell it to somebody who fits that description and who is willing to buy it at a price that will result.
Why did you decide to move here from there?
To open the an artist residency.
Oh, okay.
So that's, like, the big dream. And initially it was like, I'm going to, like, that's going to become my career. Like, I'm going to start a nonprofit basically and mm-hmm. like be the executive director of it and, like, run this organization from my house. And
that'd
now
be so cool.
It would be. But I think that, like, upon returning from our trip, it was like, I can't do that yet. Like
yeah.
I need to, like, make some money and I need to have a routine and, like, settle back into home before just, like, going from this, like, crazy experience into this, like, totally brand new challenge,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
But we do still want to do it. But it's more of a, like, long-term plan as opposed to a, like, this is our future starting right now, you know? And it is kind of an artist residency now. Like, we're all artists who live here, you mm-hmm. know? Like, I don't know if the, like, recording is picking it up, but, like, John's totally, like, downstairs in the studio making mm-hmm. music right now. So, like, you know, it is an artist residency already, but it's not the, like, fully realized version
yeah.
of it that I'm hoping it will be. So, yeah, that's why we moved. And now that we lived here, it's like, oh, this house is amazing and we love living here. And, like, it's easy to forget about, like, all those other reasons. But
yeah.
but that's still what we want to do ultimately.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
And now we go to Adele's every day.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're in Madbury.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was fun. Like a 10-minute drive.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. So let's do a little bit of lightning round and
okay.
call it a day. What is the best meal you've ever had?
The best meal I've ever had. I don't know. I love food.
If you could have one meal right now, what would it be? Or, like, for lunch today?
You know what's funny is I told Dan the other day that if I were on death row, I would ask for something, and I can't remember what it is now. But I love cashews.
Hmm.
And I love dried mangoes together. Cashews and dried mangoes. It's funny because I can only think of snacks right now. I can't think of full meals.
I wonder if they would do that as a death row meal. Like, I would like a buffet of snacks.
Well, this is
please.
The thing is I would need it to be, I would need the raw, it would have to be raw cashews, and they would have to not even be slightly stale. And no sulfur or sugar on my mangoes. Yeah, it'd be a lot of like stipulations.
It would be like an artist's like writer for the green room.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I really love curries. I love Indian curries. Mm. When we were in Paris, we went to an Indian restaurant that was phenomenal. It was so good. Yeah, it's weird. I can't think of. I could tell you. Can't think broadly like that. I don't know why.
It's okay, because you're in the moment. You're living in the moment. You're in the now. What are you afraid of?
I'm afraid of getting bored.
Hmm.
I think that's my biggest thing. Of like, life still holds magic for me, but you see all around you people where you can kind of see it fading for them.
Hmm.
And it almost seems inevitable for everybody, which is such a scary thought.
Yeah.
Like it's, things are, as you get older, each moment things become a little less wondrous
yeah.
for everybody. And I hate that idea. But also you meet old people all the time, older people who have still have lust for life.
Yeah.
I just hope to be one of them.
Yeah. I think it probably helps to even be aware of that, mm-hmm. you know, to like, to recognize it as a challenge that you want to take on, you know? So, but I mean, it doesn't seem like you're not like flitting about, like constantly seeking change mm-hmm. for fear of boredom. Like,
no,
you're
in
the same relationship for a long time. You have the same job for a long time.
I'm a very stationary human. I always have been. It's always been easy for me to feel comfortable and happy in a place that I've been a billion times, or just, you know, just at home or wherever. I do find that happening. I do find the like bored at home thing happening more often than I ever have before. Mm. But it's also the longest place I've ever. I went to like 9 or 10 different elementary schools. So we moved around a lot as kids just because we were poor and, you know, like it just happened. But so we've lived in this house for 7 or 8 years now, 8 years. And that's definitely like by far the longest place I've ever lived. So maybe this is just a new experience for me.
Yeah.
Where I like go home and I'm like, oh man, home. Mm. It doesn't happen all the time, but every once in a while it happens. And that is a new feeling for me. And that might be why that I feel that way. Like maybe this is just what's inevitably going to happen.
Yeah. And it's a little more scary to like the idea of some faraway thing, even if it sounds dreadful, is not scary if it's far away. But if there's like this idea or this feeling has been like popping up in my mind a little more than it has been
yeah,
before,
exactly.
then that's kind of scary. It's like the fear is sort of like peeking around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Well, yeah, change is good.
Yeah.
And like
it is
inviting it. And with the underlying, like wanting to keep your life, keep your own excitement about life mm-hmm. is a good motivator. Okay, last one. If you could do one thing every day forever, what would it be?
I would take a nap with my cats. They're very soft.
Yeah, totally. I've now that I'm working in the evenings a lot of days and like being on my feet more and like having to do some more sort of like physical work, I look forward to my days off so much more than I did when I was sitting behind a desk. And yesterday I actually noticed this, waking up early, even though it was too early to wake up, because I had the day off and I could take a nap.
Yeah.
It's like sleeping, taking a nap is exciting to me even when I first wake up in the morning.
And there's something about this time of year when it's not too hot, like it's been hot and you appreciate the days where it's a little cooler.
Yeah.
And when the fan actually blows cool air into your house for the first time in 2 weeks and you can lay down on your bed over the covers and feel like cool air on you. Just feels so good.
And I don't know about your cats, but like during the summertime, like Wesley will, he won't be as snuggly. Mm-hmm. Like he'll go lay on the floor.
I don't want
and then,
to do
but then when it gets a little bit cooler, he comes back on your lap and it's like, oh, that's so nice. You know,
I took a nap yesterday, actually. It was yesterday or the day before. And I was kind of, you know, in fetal position. And it was like cooler. It was the day. It was like 72 high. And he like nudged his head into my belly and then just curled up in this like an impossibly small space. He just like squished his body in there. And it was like the nicest thing.
Oh, it's such a good feeling. That's such a good feeling. Yeah, you're totally right about that. That might be my thing too. Take a nap with a small, snuggly animal. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Cool.
You did it.
I did it.
Good job.
Yes. I feel accomplished.
Good. Thanks for coming over.
Thanks for having me. My family.